Welcome to Judith Barris's Comedy Green Room. Let's see who her comedians are this afternoon.
I have with me Dr. Rob Brownlow. Yes, we've got a doctor in the house. Thank you, thank you. Doug Carter was on stage with Doug on Friday, and Lawrence Lando. And I'm just going to ask the gentlemen to just introduce themselves. A little hello to our listeners this afternoon. Lawrence, just say hello to all my listeners.
Hello, listeners.
That was short and sweet. Thank you, Lawrence. Rob, say hello to the listeners.
Hello, everybody. Yeah. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How far have you travelled, Rob?
All the way from glorious Northampton.
Oh. So you've travelled far. Well, thank you very much for coming. And on the end, we've got the TikTok sensation that is Douglas Carter. Say hello.
Hi, everyone. How you doing? You all right?
Yeah, he's used to being... you've used to being online, not necessarily live.
I've done a few live streams and stuff.
Oh,
yeah,
have
so
you?
I have, yeah. And I know how to... stay PC when I'm on radio, so you're in safe hands,
oh,
Judith.
Oh, that's a great relief to me, Dougie, because I know you're a very versatile comedian.
Yeah.
You can do family friendly.
I can now.
You can now.
Yeah.
And you can do PC, and you can do anything in between. Have you got a fave?
Yeah, I like to be a bit naughty, if I'm honest.
Oh, a bit naughty.
I like to push the line and, you know, like skirt on the line. But
skirt on the
yeah,
line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but not well.
Not today.
Not today.
Yeah.
Again, I am relieved, listeners. That he's not. Rob, can you do family friendly or just you like to stay with the adult stuff?
No, I can do family friendly. But most of my stuff is real life stuff, and unfortunately my life has been so tragic that it always ends up getting a bit dark.
Oh,
that's very similar to me then. Yeah. We've walked different paths, but the same paths at the same time.
Yeah, you got to write about what you know.
Yeah.
Exactly, write about what you know. And so how did you, because the listeners don't know that you are the snail doctor.
I am the snail doctor, yes.
Yeah,
people get very excited when they hear that I'm a doctor, but I can't go look at anyone's bunions or anything like that.
But you can look at their snails.
I can look at their snails, yep. I misspent 4 years of my life studying snails at university.
At university?
Yeah,
why?
PhD, yeah.
And so that's what made you turn to comedy?
No, what made me turn to comedy was, you know, just sitting at home thinking, I've got to get away from my family somehow.
Are they listening this afternoon? Because you just drop yourself in it if they are.
Oh, yeah, don't worry. It won't be the first or last time today I say something bad about them, so it'll be all right.
Oh, so you just thought, right, I'm gonna try it.
Yeah. It was never like a bucket list thing to do. I just one day just thought, I enjoy talking in front of people. I sort of teach forensic science now, so for a living, so I sort of quite enjoy just sort of getting up and talking. And you're talking about dead bodies all day, it's nice to occasionally get up and talk about something fun.
Yeah. Do you drop a few jokes into the forensic science?
I try not to, because it's as serious as it can be. It's quite cathartic to then come and sort of do comedy at the end of the day when it's all been quite heavy during the day.
Yeah, I can imagine. Forensic science. Ooh.
A friend of mine's just got into that. She's going into the police forensic side of it. So that's interesting.
Oh yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's hard work. It's murder, in fact.
Whee! Give him 5 minutes.
Yeah. Lawrence, how did you get into it?
I don't really know. I mean, so 16 years ago, I did it for a year, and then I quit, and then I came back about 10 months ago. But if I think back, like when I was a kid. My dad was too cheap to fly on holiday, so we'd drive for like 18 hours in a car.
Yeah.
And but he would record, or I think it was LBC at the time or something, it was a Fred House Go hour of comedy, and he would record it for weeks beforehand, so we'd have like hours and hours of stand-up in the car when I was a kid, so it'd be like Jasper Carrot, Lenny Henry, all that kind of stuff. So that probably kind of, you know, psychologically traumatised me to want to get up on stage and do it. But I've no idea why I got up and did it in the first place, but I did, and I had a really good you know, year, 16 years ago, too good, really, I think. My first gig was with a guy called Scott Bennett, who's really big now.
Oh, if only you'd have kept that, yeah.
Well, we became good friends, because we both did our first gig, it was a gong show, and we both were out after like the first 2 minutes.
Spiky Mike one.
Yeah, in Nottingham it was, yeah. And then we both did our second gig together at Spiky Mike in Derby, and I won that one.
Oh, well.
And then I went off and won 4 in a row of Spiky Mike.
Did you?
Yeah, and then I won Beat the Frog.
Wow.
Then I came runner-up in this thing called C69 New Act of the Year, which had Kiri Pritchard-McLean, Brennan Reese, Will Duggan, Scott, a guy called Rob Coleman, who's a promoter. So really good. And then that got me in with Gag Reflex, because they were the judges on the final night. Who they looked after Tape Face at the time.
Yeah, they're quite big.
So I started getting like really big gigs, and Spiky Mike put me with like 5 minutes between Chappy Core Sandy and Hal Cruttendon, which is great. But then when you win all those, you get given 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I had a good 5. And I didn't know how it worked, the scene.
The progression.
Yeah, I didn't know there was. There was a new act night. I'd just done gong shows.
Yeah.
So, you know, it went well and then off a cliff, really, for me. And I stopped enjoying it. And I decided to just give it a rest after the year. But then I've come back now, which is...
How long gap did you say you had?
16 years.
Wow.
16 years. So you've got a new 5 minutes, have you?
Yeah, well I've done up to 20 now. But I came back, and it's amazing, actually. So I messaged Spiky Mike 16 years later saying...
Remember me?
And he did.
Did
he actually remembered me, because I think I'm the only one to have won like 4 in a row. Oh, and I came runner-up in his Champion of Champions on my 7th gig as well.
Right.
So he remembered me from all that. And so he brought me onto his Leicester gong show. And
the Kale.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, lovely room. And came runner-up there. Then he said, before I give you a 10 spot, come and do the Derby one. And I came runner-up there. And he actually came up to me in the interval and said, just don't do the gongs anymore. We'll just give you 10s. So I've done 3 or 4 10 spots for him on his pro nights now. I've had a very interesting journey. Even now, like, I've come off the circuit a little bit, and I'm onto a different circuit now, which I'm doing for a couple of months. But I don't want to hog the whole conversation here. But it's been good. And you guys all know the Hertfordshire Comedy Collective. That got me back in. So there's a guy, Duncan Hart, who runs this thing. And Steve, any new act listening, or if you're thinking about getting on stage and you're in the area, get in touch, because I didn't know if I wanted to get back into it. And I looked online, and he was running these, they're called workshops, but they're not workshops. He rents a studio. You go down, and there's pro acts like Chris Norton Walker.
Chris.
Complete newbies there as well, and there's people in between, and you have like 3 hours, and you all get about half hour standing up, and you work through material, and you get feedback, and it is great, and it gives you some confidence. And I did that for a month before deciding I'm gonna get back.
And
I
went, the bug again.
Yeah, I went and did loads of fives, and from there did Spiky. Yeah.
To hear that you did. That you was it 4 gongs on the bounce that you won
for Funhouse, and
is,
Beat the Frog, so that's 5.
Yeah, that
I suppose.
Is unheard. I won 2 on the bounce for him.
Wow.
And I turned up to my 3rd, and he went, "Here's who won 3 on the bounce," and it was this lady. And I looked at her, give her a Google, and she was touring Australia. And I thought, "Well, I'll win this. That's it. I'm off to Australia." And at 2 minutes, two red cards went up, and my knees went like that. And I was like, oh, that's it, all the dreams are gone now. But no, I still got through, I was beat by a guy called Mike Carter on the night.
I know Mike,
he's a good lad.
Yeah.
And he's got the same last name as me, so I'll let him off with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, to win 4 on the bounce, mate,
but,
and then beat the frog,
that's
good going, mate.
No, it was good. But it was interesting, because back then, it's probably an age thing as well. But 16 years ago, like, we were all staying out for a drink afterwards. So I've got loads of photos of me, like, younger, with Scott, Kiri, Brennan, Will Duggan, Rob Coleman. I mean, I don't know what it looks like now, but he had crazy hair back
then.
Still
got crazy hair.
Yeah, well, he's put me for a gig in, I think, November, so I'm looking forward to seeing him. But, so you'd all be out having a drink, and now that I'm a bit older, you don't really do... A lot of acts now seem to do the gig and go home, and... I try to stay to the end, because I always learn a lot.
Best thing
and
to
it's
hear,
nice
yeah.
to chat, even with the promoter afterwards, because you get so much knowledge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I actually get to gigs early because I like to see how they set up. And you get to look at the room and, you know, you kind of, what can I talk about that's more personal in this gig by looking at the room, by getting hour earlier?
Scott Bennett's brilliant at that.
Yeah, he is. And who's in the room? That, oh, this guy, I could, you know, what can I talk about him? And you've got half hour to think about it before the night starts. But a lot of acts don't do that now, which is a shame.
I didn't do it 16 years ago, but I've noticed that in the last 8 years, when I first started, everybody would stay behind, everybody would chat and what have you. But now, they just turn up, they do their set, they're off. And Rob, do you find that as well?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I always like to stay because it's a free comedy night for me. You know, you get to go along, you do your thing for 10 minutes, and then you get to listen to a load of really good comedians usually. And it's as much about the socialising as it is about sort of the comedy for me. I mean, all of the comedians, it's quite nice because we've all gone through this mad thing that we do, and we've all got our own different reasons for doing it, and we're all a little bit broken for doing it. But we all appreciate that. And it's because we've all gone through the same things. If you've been doing it, you know, I haven't been doing it that long, really, in relation to some individuals. But even having done it for a sort of couple of years now, you get less down on the bad gigs, you get less high on the really good gigs, and everything just turns, you begin to normalise it all a little bit. And it's just so nice to see other comedians and speak to them about, you know, their journeys and how and what they've gone through to get to exactly the same points. Because it is, I find it fascinating just to meet the other comedians. For me, that's the joy of it.
And this is what this show is about. I'm here with Dr. Rob Brownlow, Doug Carter and Lawrence Lando. We were talking earlier about staying behind after a gig, and Dougie's little eyes lit up.
Yeah. It's something that, like, it resonated with me when you said it, because I always try and do that. I'd like you said, I'd get to gigs early, but not just for the gig. If I know that this is a thing, I feel like I'm on an adventure doing comedy. So, like, when I get to, you know this as well, Judith, I'll get to gigs like an hour, sometimes 2 hours early. One, because I food blog, so I'll find somewhere to eat a nice burger or something. Mm. I love my scenery and my architecture, so I'll get to places so I can have a little look around. I mean, when we gigged for you the other day, there was a mill there, weren't there, that you told me to go and check out.
Details. Go have a look.
There was loads of, like, thatched cottages and a couple of Tudor buildings and stuff, and, you know, I was into all that. But then I get to the gig early, and I'll try and stay till the end, mainly because, can you remember Phil Carr? I don't know if you remember comedian. He was a one-liner comedian. Yeah. He said to me once, he went, how come you get so many gigs? I said, because I do something you don't do, Phil. And he was like, what's that? I said, I stay. I get there early. I network. I talk to everyone. And he went, do you think that's why I'm not getting as many? I went, yeah, I know it is. And then a week later, he messaged me and he went, do you know what, Doug? He said, the last two gigs I've been to, open mics, I've stayed, I've talked. He says, I've got three extra gigs off the back of it. I went, there you go. So to any new comedians out there, that's one thing I would suggest. And not only that, don't forget that sometimes they'll have, like, a closer on a new material night or something that's way above our level. That's where you want to be. So they're the people you want to be watching, you know. So stick around, and you never know. The networking could just open more doors for you.
Well, the thing that's interesting about that as well is I think a lot of new acts don't understand they're part of a night.
Yeah.
Whereas they think it's about their set.
Yeah.
Whereas you're here, we're all here together to try and make the audience laugh as one collaborative effort. So when people turn up to a gig and they go, I need to get home, so can I go on second? You should be here for the whole night, and that's the whole thing. Because it's amazing how a little bit of support for the comedians by the comedians can actually improve the night as well. And a lot of people don't understand that. So getting there, like, late, and you're going to do your bit, then go home, you know what? You probably won't get booked again, or at least not straight away. Whereas if you turn up, support the night, even talk to the audience as well, and you stay behind, you help. It's amazing what that collaborative effort does for the night and for getting rebooked.
I mean, I get it sometimes. Sometimes, like, you've got people that have got work the next day or a train booked, so they have to go. And there's been occasions where I've had to run off early, but I'm so apologetic for it because I want to be there from the beginning to the end. Like, With your night, the guy that was on after me in
Houghton.
Yeah, that's what I said, yeah. in Houghton. The guy, I'd never seen him before, so I wanted to see him. Mark Rowe was opening. I haven't seen him for ages, so I wanted to see what he was doing again. So, you know, and not only that, you get to the amount of tips. I've had toppers off people that have come up gone, have you thought about saying this? So just through staying and talking to people, it's not... as well as supporting the night, you're helping your own career, because these people could give you a little tip that boosts your material as well.
I'm glad you said that. So one of my big bugbears is, you know, as the MC, I've been talking to the audience, you've built a rapport with maybe somebody in the audience, and the other comedians have picked up on it, you know, and we've all been talking to Dave or whatever, and then somebody comes on and they say, oh, hello mate, what's your name? You think, well, four comedians before that knew who he was, knew what the story's been going as with. Like you were saying, it's a whole evening's entertainment rather than...
Have you noticed sometimes there'll be a headliner, like if they're doubling, they've opened somewhere else and turn up. Yeah. One thing that they'll say when they turn up is, who's been spoke to in the crowd?
Yeah.
What's been gone over at the minute? Because I've done a bit before where someone's mentioned the same word from someone in the crowd and it's lulled. And then afterwards they've come off stage and they've gone, I had a bit of a dip here. And they're like, yeah, someone else mentioned that before. Yeah. Ah, they missed that. But a good act will do their research before they go on as well.
And I think the audience members notice if the acts leave. I think that the audience want to buy into the fact that this night is an experience that won't be recreated again, right? Mm. And we know it's some comedy nights, anything could happen sometimes, right? And they want to be part of that. And I think they lose a little bit of that if they see half the acts up and leave in the break or, you know, halfway through. They want to know that everyone there has experienced that experience for that night.
I like to go up and look at your night the other night. I went up afterwards and spoke to a few people because I'm proper council. And it was really,
I mean, the shock and horror.
That's what I mean. I lean into it. I open now with a bit that talks about, like, being into architecture and stuff like that and how nice an area is. And then afterwards, I go down the council route. So I warm you up with that and then show you that I'm not one of you, but you will like this. But it's like, afterwards, I went up to, there was three ladies at the night, and I went up to them afterwards and I was like, I wasn't sure how I was going to go down tonight because I just didn't feel like you had engaged me. And she went, we thought you were brilliant. And I was like, oh, that was lovely.
I will just say, I've had feedback from the village and it did go down very, very well.
I headlined one of your nights, Judith. Yeah, and when I, there was like a coach load of people from a business that were on a work trip.
Yes,
and they were great fun. And as I was leaving, so
that
I had
a Christmas one, wasn't it?
Yeah, I had about an hour and a half to get back home. And I think it finished about 10-ish and I was due back. And as I was leaving, they all accosted me and I ended up in the pub with them until...
Really? How nice is that?
And that was lovely, right?
I didn't get an invite.
I know, sorry, Judith. I was going to ask you, but they said, no, keep it from her. But that was amazing, right? You know, just like some people I've never met, you know, we shared a moment and then I just got... They invited me out on their work, which was wonderful.
I've had that in Sunderland. Well, South Shields it was. Where the audience has ended up, a couple of them have took me back to their auntie's bar, rock bar, and I was staying up there anyway because it was like a 4-hour drive home, so I thought I'd just get a hotel.
Yeah.
And up that area, they're like £4 for a hotel, so you know, so I thought, I might as well go on the razzle dazzle with these guys. And
you'd say you're on an adventure, aren't you?
I am. I am on an adventure. That's what I love about this. The amount of times I've stayed over. And like even my missus, I did a competition in York a few years ago. I knew I weren't going to win the competition. They wanted someone northern for it. If you were good, you'd have won it, you know. But the guy who did win it, he was fantastic. But straight, I wanted to see York. So I phoned my missus up straight afterwards. I was like, I'm bringing you here on your birthday. And we've done that. York, Chester, a few other places, Hull. Yeah, which gets a bad rep, but it's actually beautiful. Yeah. If you go around the harbour area, it's gorgeous.
It's all been revamped, hasn't it?
Yeah. It's lovely. Yeah. It's lovely.
It's lovely. Do you, Rob, would you consider you're on an adventure?
All the time. I think I'm like a puppy. I'm just happy to be outside, right? You know, just happy to get out of the house. I see it as a real privilege to sort of, you know, the fact that anyone would sit in a room and listen to anything I've got to say is, I see it as an absolute privilege. So it brings me utter joy to stand in front of people. And I always sincerely say at the end of my shows, I always, you know, if I'm emceeing, I always say, you know, like, we're, the acts here are genuinely, you know, you know, their applause and people's efforts and laughter is generally, you know, really, really welcomed, because yeah. You know, the laughter is a really personal thing, and for, to get a load of people in a room to share that, I always think has been really, really joyful. So yeah, no, I mean, like I say, I'm always stumbling in between one thing in life or whatever, you know. So, you know, I'm doing comedy at the moment. Whether I'll be doing comedy in 5 years' time, I don't know. But
well, I mean, you sat next to somebody who used to do comedy with Scott Bennett, and Scott Bennett is touring and selling out tours. So you never know.
You never know.
You never
he
know.
Wasn't 16 years ago, let's just put that clear. But,
well,
but
yeah, oh, he's put his hours in. I mean, that's a good thing that, although, we could talk about. The hours that yeah. you can put in. And Dougie's put the miles in. So you've got to put the miles in, you've got to put the hours in. People think you're an instant success, don't
yeah.
they?
Not, well, overnight.
The thing is, what I'd say, it's interesting because so now I'm married with a 2.5-year-old, right? So going back into stand-up was a discussion with my wife about it and everything. She's very supportive. But when
she
I...
She likes to get him out of the house.
Yeah, get me out of the house, yeah. that says my son, I think. But 16 and a half years ago, I would be travelling all over the place, didn't care how long it took. Now I do... I look at how long it takes to get to a gig, because I think for the level I'm doing, 4 hours, you know, two there, two back, and then also 2 hours at a gig, that's 6 hours. Mm. I'd rather stay at home and write for an hour and a half and see my family, but doing gigs that may be an hour away, that's fine. So I do have that kind of in my head when I'm planning where I'm going to gig and so on. For a pro night, I will travel, like I did Spiky Mike up in Sheffield, so that's fine. I'll do a long trip there and back. Before a 10-minute open spot, I try to keep it within an hour. Otherwise, because I do think a lot of acts don't realise the writing, because I see acts doing 10 minutes and they haven't got a bulletproof 5 minute yet, and I don't understand why they're in such a rush to jump to the 10 minutes.
And then doing hour shows as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they think it's all about stage time, and to a degree it is, but you also have to understand how to write, and also to sit down and write, not sit down and just procrastinate. You know, I said I've seen acts just doing 10 minutes, and I know for a fact they haven't got bulletproof 3 minutes, let alone 5 minutes. Because I got bulletproof 5, and that's when I tested the gongs now when I came back. Then I went and made it a 7. I didn't even think, get it to 10. I went, how can I get to 7 minutes?
Yep.
Then I went and did 10, and I probably went through half an hour of material to get it to yep. 10 minutes. And even now, I don't think it's bulletproof my 10 minutes. But I'm seeing acts going off and like doing 10, 15, and it's yeah. it's all over the place. They're not getting laughs, but
it's more like a TED talk.
It is.
Yeah,
it really is.
Something you mentioned yeah. as well a minute ago about like the bulletproof 5, 10 and stuff like that. I used to go into competitions. Now I've had my own in competitions, but there was a guy who I used to come across, Osama Khan, and 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes. Bulletproof. And whenever I was in a competition with him, I was like, oh. And he went, what? I went, well, what's the point in doing this, because you're here? And I'd say 7 out of 10 times I knew he was going to beat me in these competitions, because he was, his 5 and 7 and 10 were so tight. And he went, yeah, but look where you are. I went, what do you mean? He went, you've got 20, 30, 40 minutes. He went, I'm getting booked to do progression 10 minute spots, and I can't get past the progression 10 because I haven't got a 15 or a 20. And I was like, I never looked at it like that, you know. And like, he was brilliant at that, but he just couldn't get further. And I don't know, I think he's quit now, and it's a shame, because he was so good. But another thing that you said earlier about like the knocking it on the head for a while, comedy's not going anywhere. So even if you drop off, you're still comedy minded, aren't you? And you're still writing, and there's a time where you could come back. And like I've just said, comedy's going nowhere.
So that's really interesting, right? Because I've stepped away from the comedy circuit about a month ago, but I'm still doing comedy, but on a completely different circuit. It's like a DJ night thing where they have a room with burlesque, magician, spoken word music. And I'm getting paid work for it, which is great. But I got that from social media, because I started doing these videos, like music videos and stuff, and it's been getting good. DJs been getting in touch with it and talking with them about it. But what I found really interesting about that is I doing progression spots, right? I've been doing them, but I realised I'm not... What works at an open spot in like an open mic night does not always work on a pro night. People have paid 16 quid to come and watch. Completely different beast. And what the big thing I've noticed is I didn't have an act. And I don't think a lot of acts understand what that means, which is like, what's your personality on stage? People might have really amazing jokes, material, one-liners, for instance, amazing, but they don't have a persona that ties it all together. Mm. We know what Scott Bennett's persona is. He's that family guy, hates his kids, in air quotes, you know, with the wife, and it's all domestic stuff, right? He's got that persona, and it's
and
bang
people
on.
People can relate to that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of the best.
And you see all the, like, Ramesh Ranganathan, he's got a similar, but a bit more sarcastic kind of thing. But all those acts that are successful, they've got an act. Mm-hmm. And a lot of acts don't understand that. And now I've dropped away in doing this, and I'm able to actually spread my wings and figure out who I am. And I'm really enjoying it. Very different, but I'm really enjoying it. Well, I'll come back.
What you've said there, when I started, I kind of took off quite quick because I was doing like internet stuff before, so I had like an abundance of material. But when I put it all together, I was an act in a way, right? But one of my friends turned around, he went, "I love your material, it's really good, but you're not you." So there's two sides of that. There's the act side of it, and then there's being yourself. Yeah. And I think in the last year, I've come out of my shell, and now I've got my material, but my personality is showing through now with it. And it's like, I just feel like I've turned that corner, you know? And like, the act thing, I totally get it, you know, like to be an act. Whereas I just want to spread my wings and just like free flow a little bit as well. And I think that's where the emceeing comes in, doesn't it? Yeah. Like where you can, I enjoy my act as like a open middle closer, but the emceeing has opened the door to me just being able to, just free flow a bit as well.
You can have a bit of fun with the audience.
I was
once asked, you know, do you prefer to emcee or do you prefer your act? And I had to think about it because my day job, I've always sort of played around with the crowd anyway. It's a different beast, isn't it?
It's an entirely different beast. I know people that are great acts, but really, really struggle with emceeing.
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
Emceeing is I personally enjoy emceeing more. I like to go back and do the comfort of my set occasionally, because that's lovely. It's safety in that. I know what works, I know what doesn't. But emceeing is, I get so much more out of the room laughing when I'm emceeing.
Something off the cuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
just
works.
And the amount of times you forget something, this is why I record. Another thing, guys, record everything.
Yeah.
Because you'd be amazed at how many times you'll say something off the cuff and forget that you've said it, and then you'll watch it back and be like, that was brilliant, and then you can add that to your set, and that's another way of things growing, isn't it?
And you've got to watch yourself as well, because I always thought I was a really sort of happy, you know, on stage. I thought my persona made me look really, really cheerful, and I look back at recording all my gigs, and I looked utterly miserable. And I thought, why do I look so sad? I'm having the time of my life, but I look like I hate it. So I've been trying to work really, really hard on actually trying to look the way I feel, right? Because when I watch it back, I go, well, I like the jokes, but why do I look so miserable?
Love Dev. Do you know Love Dev Barpaga?
Yes, yes.
Right, Love Dev, he used to be a one-liner, but like a straight-faced one-liner, and someone had said to him, don't hold me to this, I think this is what happened. Someone said to him, he's such a fun guy, bring that out in his act. And now he laughs at himself, and like he's changed from a one-liner to a one-liner slash storyteller. And I love watching him on stage and just the fun, just him laughing at his own jokes. Watching the audience's reaction to that, it's brilliant. So I think it's opened another door for him, you know.
I'm here with Rob Brownlow, Doug Carter and Lauren Lando. Let's just forget it. Edit. I'm just here with three comedians. we've been having a very interesting, almost serious conversation. And I think this podcast, this episode, then new comedians definitely ought to have a listen to, because I think they could learn a lot. Gentlemen, I think we ought to do best gig, worst gig. What do we think? Have we got one?
Definitely got worst gig.
Worst gig? Yeah, go on, Rob. Yeah, what was your worst gig?
The worst gig was about, I think it was about my fifth or sixth gig, and I was invited onto a local night, but it was in a pub that, I won't name the pub, but we didn't have a specific room or anything. It was just sort of out in the main pub area on a night when everyone else was just in there normally. And there were only two people in the audience. Well, I thought they were audience members. It turns out they were just two people that were there on a romantic dinner. And they had to listen to me talking about my kids and my life while they were sharing lab lunch, which is great. And halfway through the set, one guy walked through while I was doing my bit. And when I put a pound in the fruit machine that was next to me.
Oh, nice.
Oh, no.
It just continued on its way, and I made a joke about it, but there was no one in the audience to appreciate it. So the
It just reminded me of something now. Yeah. I was going to say about a football club where I thought I was going to have them. I thought they were my people, and it turned out they weren't, and they didn't go for anything. Oh. But when I come off stage, my pal Ricky Balshaw, he went, "That was really good." I went, "Did you just watch me? I was terrible." He went, No, it was terrible, but your delivery was brilliant." So it was one of, you know, when you feel like you've turned the corner.
Yeah.
But the worst one ever was similar to yours, where we turned up to a pub and they had boxing on a TV above our heads. And the room was packed, and I'd seen the two acts before really struggle. And when I got up, the first thing I said was, "Give me a cheer if you're here for the boxing." Whole room cheered. So we're basically standing under a telly, looking like everyone's watching us, and they're not. They're just watching the boxing. It was awful.
My worst gig was actually quite recently, just before I came off the circuit. It might be the reason for it. It was weird. It's in a country pub. You go to it, you think this would be a lovely audience, right? And it was you know, an open spot night, whatever it was. But the MC, I'm not going to say his name, he's a lovely guy, he's a really lovely guy, but he's a very sweary MC, and he kind of riles the audience up whenever he MCs. And it's not right for like open mic or open spot people. And I went on, and the audience were just kind of ready to have a go at you and that kind of a thing. And during my set, people were standing up saying, who wants a drink? I'll get a drink at the bar.
Oh,
and I've never walked off stage, and I walked off that one night because it was just, I just felt there's no point even being on stage. I did like 6 minutes. I said to the MC, "You can come back. I'm not even giving them my time," and I walked off. So that was my worst gig. And my best gig probably is about 2 weeks ago, at the kind of rave nights I've been doing, because it's the first time I felt actually like myself, because I'm not performing to impress a promoter. And it was just really fantastic. I was doing all this stuff I'd never done before, with like vocal cues and my MacBook and everything. And I've never done that on the open on any of the comedy circuit before. And it was just absolutely...
You're like, just having fun.
Yeah, it was. I felt like myself for the first time ever, actually. And it was really, really, really good. So, yeah, that was my best gig.
That was your best gig. Rob, have you got a best gig?
Whenever I go to London, there's a promoter in London that very kindly puts me on from time to time. And they're always great in... Whenever I go to Brixton, I don't know why, they always seem to love me.
Love you in Brixton.
They love me in Brixton, yeah. Maybe I should try and do more gigs, though. I don't know. That's great. But probably the best one I've done in recent times is I was invited to do and run a night and do a set for... It was a biking convention for motorbikes.
Motorbikes.
I had this sort of pre-image of what I thought the audience were going to be like. And I thought that they were going to be raucous and bearded drunk men, and I was 100% right. they were absolutely lovely, because they were an absolute like game for a laugh. They would heckle, but it was they were all taking the mick out of each other, taking the mick out of me. I was taking the mick out of them. One of the guys in the audience had bought like an electric motorbike, and they all hated him because of it, right? So anything that came up or whatever, they all absolutely slated him for it. And it was nice to almost be part of that community for the night. And we ended up playing games where we were trying to bang a nail into a log with an axe, and all sorts of things ended up going on in the night beyond just the comedy. And so it was just great fun.
You just reminded me of something now. Because I was trying to think of which one was the best, and I've had so many good ones. Don't mean that, being Cookie. I mean, like, you know, when you've like Gus Khan, I got to. He done a homecoming show in Coventry, 650 people, quite early on in my paid career, and that was amazing. In my second year of comedy, I got to do a 10-minute spot on a gig where Tom Allen was closing it, and like that was 850 people in. There was two places I really wanted to gig, which was, one was my local Civic Hall, the other was Belgrade Theatre in Coventry. This was at the Belgrade Theatre in my second year, and I couldn't believe that.
Yeah.
But the one that I think really sticks out in my head now, and you've just reminded me, and there's a reason for it, was a biker gig for Rick Hulse. And I'd done a 10-minute spot for him somewhere, and from that 10-minute spot, he said, right, you can come and open this next one. And it was like 50 people in a marquee.
Yeah.
So I turn up to this next one thinking it's going to be sort of similar. 650 people in a marquee, and I was like, flipping neck. yeah and I got up, Lost Voice Guy was closing, so I'm out the back, I'm blowing on my hands because I'm dead nervous. I got up and I had one of the best gigs I'd ever had, and then afterwards I've gone to the toilet, and I don't know if you've seen them at a festival, they look like giant lemon squeezers where four blokes just get up and stand and I'm standing there going to the toilet, and there's a guy opposite just staring at me like that, which made it a bit awkward, and he went, can I have a chat with you? I went, maybe in a minute. So we finished what we were doing, and then afterwards he said, because this biker gig, it was for bikers that had been injured and stuff through accidents and things, and I think that's, it was like a charity thing. He come up to me and he said, I just want to tell you, mate, he says, I've been here all weekend. He says, at the minute I'm looking after my mum. She's kind of in the late stages of life. So I'm looking after my mum and I can't get her out of my head all the time I've been here. He went, for the 20 minutes you've been on stage, he says, I forgot everything. And I just laughed. And I stood there and I thought, that's what we do it for. You know, like the creating jokes and getting a laugh off a joke that you've created, that's brilliant, that is. But to have someone say something like that, it's, nothing beats that, does
that
it?
That makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah. So it was. So I think I'll have to put that down as, and Rick Horse's missus turned around and she went, I'm putting him on a bedroom ban, if you know what I mean, until he gives you a headline spot. And I went, no, you can't do that. I mean, Lost Voice Guy's closing. I can see the level of headliners you're getting, and it's an honour for you to say that, but just get me another opening spot. I'll be happy with that. But I don't know, Rick. I hope that hasn't happened and you have still had fun in the bedroom. If you haven't, it's my fault and I apologise.
Yeah, no one's ever offered to hold their partner to ransom to get me on the set.
What a compliment that is as well, though. Yeah, it was amazing. So I'm glad you mentioned the bike thing there.
Well, that was definitely different.
Yeah. It was brilliant.
Gentlemen, we are rapidly running out of time. Do you just want to say, where you're going to be next? Where's your next gig, Dougie?
Can't remember.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
I don't know until the Monday. Then I'll just I'll flick the page. And it's like a magical mystery tour.
He's on an adventure.
Can I just say, actually, on that, a little tip for anyone listening, always have like a diary and a pen in your pocket. Because number of times I've been at a gig and someone said, are you free on this date for a gig? And then some, you might have it on your phone, but like if you don't know, it's so easy for that gig then to not never happen.
Yeah.
So if you have something, I always have, like, I've even got it on me now, a little diary and a pen just so you know exactly when your gigs are. Because the number of times you get offered something off the cuff and you just don't know if you can do it or not, it's amazing.
I've just stepped into the future because I used to have a diary where it was Monday to Sunday. So then when I'd only know what was going on future if I was trying to book a gig, I'd flick through, oh, I've got them on them days. Whereas now I've stepped into the future and I've got one on my phone.
Put it on your phone,
so it's like a month, then I can see what's going on for the month until I flick to the next month, you know, and then it's like,
Adventure for the next month. Gentlemen, we have run out of time. I'd like to thank you all, the three of you, even, I'm talking as if there's 300.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, it's been very interesting. Thanks very much for coming on.
Pleasure.
And hopefully our listeners have enjoyed it as well. And we'll put it all out on social media. I hope you will share it too. Because I think we've done an episode that will be you know, of great use to a lot of comedians out there just starting up. So thanks very much, guys. You just want to shout bye to all our listeners?
Cheerios.
Bye.
Doug Carter Comedy if you want to find me on social media. Goodbye.
The Green Room was hosted by Judith Barris, edited by Sue Rodwell-Smith, and recorded in Huntingdon, Cambridgeshire, exclusively for Ouse Valley Radio.